Salah al-Din did not come suddenly. There was a lot of Islamic work among the masses by the scholars. And there was a lot of work to unite the Ummah before Muslims were able to conquer their enemies.
In preparing the Ummah to reclaim its lost glory, the role of authentic Islamic education and madrasas, both during and prior to the time of Salah al-Din, has to be highlighted. Political and military resistance to the Crusader and Shia onslaught was further enhanced by an intellectual resistance. At the helm of this educational wave, prior to Salah al-Din, was Nizam al-Mulk, the wazir of the Seljuk Sultan, who pioneered the establishment of dozens of Islamic institutions known as the Nizami schools across the Middle East.
His full name was Abu Ali Hassan ibn Ali Tusi, who was born in Iran in Persia and also was assassinated in Persia. What is very important that he is known to have established a lot of madaris throughout the Seljuk Empire, and these were Sunni Islamic institutions which were referred to as the Nizamiya institutions. And the quality of education in these Islamic institutions was very great and very high. Of course, they were supported financially and also politically by the ruling and the elite class. One of them was the Al-Nizamiya of Baghdad. And if you recall, the great scholar Imam Ghazali was also appointed as the principal or leading teacher at this institute.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala guided Nizam al-Mulk in a way that is rarely paralleled in religious, academic and political history. The Nizami schools flourished for centuries and produced hundreds of scholars, mostly educated in Shafi fiqh, who were then deployed to occupy important positions such as those of judges and muftis, thereby judging and administering according to the Ahlus Sunnah and reducing the Shia influence in the lives of the Ummah. Though there may be similarities between the Nizami schools and the current Darul Ulums, whose syllabus is called Darsa Nizami, Maulana Yunus Osman says it is important to appreciate that the origins of the two systems are not the same.
We must remember that the Al-Nizamiya syllabus or the schools that were established during this period, that is between in the 11th century, are not associated with the similar teachings. I wouldn't say teachings, but I would say the similar name of Dars-e-Nizami that was established in the 17th, 18th century in India. That was established by Mullah Nizamuddin of the Farangi Mahal scholars.
Affiliated with the Nizami system arose men of the caliber of Imam Al-Ghazali, who too made immense contributions.
Where did Salah al-Din come from? Suddenly a man comes and the Ummah becomes good? No, that did not happen. About 100 years before Salah al-Din, there were two scholars, one of the greatest scholars of Islam, Abu Hamid al-Ghazali, Abu Bakr al-Tartushi. These are scholars who are not only busy with books, they are busy with the Ummah, the situation of the Ummah. So they saw that the Ummah is weakening and the enemies will soon attack it. That is even before the Crusaders came. So Abu Bakr al-Tartushi and Abu Hamid al-Ghazali saw that there is no hope in the Muslim leaders. We need more than that. These scholars, who were true scholars, that cared about the ummah, not only about their positions and their salaries and their books. They cared about the ummah. They decided to take things in their own hands. And they started to collect the scholars. And they started to educate Muslims about Islam. And they emphasized on young men and women. And this movement was called Harakat Ihya al-Din. Ihya al-Din. To raise Islam again in the hearts of Muslims. And they succeeded.
At a time when anyone who dared to challenge the Ismaili ideology was dealt with by the sword, Imam al-Ghazali stood fearless in challenging and refuting their Batini ideas. Additionally, he put forward a new methodology and syllabus in Islamic academia that was first and foremost based on genuine Islam, but also integrated other spheres of worldly knowledge. This doctrine became a yardstick for scholars, and it was this madrasa system that eventually yielded leaders of the caliber of Imad al-Din, Nur al-Din, and Salah al-Din.
It's our hope and expectation that we have heroes like Salah al-Din. And the way we raise heroes like this is like I told you. Salah al-Din started off how? The first characteristic he started off with, knowledge. Knowledge. That stuff that some people say is boring, we don't want to go to the seer, we don't want to go to the fiqh, the tafsir. I say and I say over again, when I make these durus and other brothers make them, it's our aim to make heroes like Salah al-Din. Wallah, that's our aim. Our aim isn't just to take this tafsir and go back and sleep on it. Our aim, we want to see in this ummah Salah al-Din.
On ascending to prominence in Egypt, Salah al-Din al-Ayyubi altered the direction and rectified the output of institutions as fundamental as Azhar. At the same time, he took a cue from his teacher Nur al-Din and embarked on an epic drive to construct Sunni Madaris in Egypt.
What did he do? He closed Al-Azhar down. He began to establish schools. Everyone's united against the Muslim, and Salah al-Din is establishing schools. Yes, Salah. Salah knew what he was doing. Salah al-Din was establishing schools because he knew the generations needed to know their Islam.
To counter one of the last remaining Shia strongholds in Egypt, he built a Sunni madrasa right next to a shrine in Cairo that the Shia falsely attributed to Sayyidina Hussein. He built the grand madrasa, As-Salihiyya, at the shrine of Imam Shafi, which was dedicated to teaching the Shafi madhab and was described as the crown of all schools by Imam As-Suyuti, due to its size and quality of construction. The first school for teaching hadith in Cairo was also established by the Ayyubids, and special areas were designated for teaching tajweed and qira'at. Madaris were set up to accommodate either exclusively for the followers of one particular madhab, or in other cases, teaching of fiqh according to all four madhaib at one venue were accommodated. Particular attention was given to the Shafi madhab, as it was the official madhab of state and the reference point for all judges of the dynasty. Efforts in establishing madaris during the era of Salah al-Din were not limited to Cairo. Instead, they spanned the entire Egypt. He founded a school for the Shafis in Alexandria and several masajid, and simultaneously founded waqfs that looked after the accommodation needs of scholars and even paid them handsome stipends. The traveller Ibn Jubayr estimated that Salah al-Din's spending on madaris in Egypt tallied up some 2,000 dinars a month. The services to students of Deen went beyond the ordinary. Baths were constructed, a hospital was established for them, and doctors were appointed to conduct regular checkups. Salah al-Din was not satisfied with just constructing madaris. He also took steps to attract leading Sunni ulama to Egypt. Furthermore, Salah al-Din and his associates extended the construction of madaris beyond Egypt. He built a school for Malikis in Damascus and eventually would build a Shafi madrasa in Al-Quds. His sister Sitt al-Sham built a Shafi madrasa in Damascus, whilst his other sister Rabia Khatun built another for the Hanbalis. Statistics indicate that in Ayyubid-run Damascus alone, there were 92 schools covering all four madhahib, in addition to other centers of learning, such as the Umayyad Masjid. Elements of the syllabus at the madaris established by Salahuddin included the Holy Quran, Hadith, Aqidah, and Fiqh. Salahuddin ordered many places to be built where he appointed persons to teach Quran to especially the orphans and children of the poor. The Umayyad Masjid in Damascus during his lifetime was said to never be devoid of Quranic recital, whether morning or evening. Regarding Hadith, Salahuddin was enthusiastic in disseminating it, as it represented a means by which Muslims could be stirred towards jihad and recognizing the holiness of Sham. Additionally, the Shia disregard most of the authentic ahadith and disseminate many fabricated narrations. By promoting the teaching of ahadith, Salahuddin sought to enliven this Islamic science, which had been neglected in the dark years of Fatimid rule.
And what happens is that in these internal states of Hama, Homs, and Damascus and Baalbek, you had madrasas. You know what Nuruddin does? He does this. And this had really, really a pivotal effect in the prospects for the jihad in that time. What he does is that he ensures that in these centers of learning, these schools of learning, the people are learning fadail. Fadail al-Quds. Fadail al-Sham. Fadail Dimashq, they're learning about the virtues of Jerusalem and the virtues of Sham, the virtues of Damascus. Because it's an obvious point, but look at how he enacted it. Why on earth, why would people travel all the way to Jerusalem and fight and defend a city, maybe die in that city, settle in that city, if they don't know about the importance of that city? They don't know why Sham essentially is important. And so they began a process. Some were written before the Crusaders even arrived, like Al-Rabai, Al-Wasati. These were early books on Fadail al-Quds. And some were written in the 1150s by As-Sama'ani and others. Fadail al-Sham, Fadail al-Quds, about the virtues of Jerusalem. Hadith. Ala wa innal iman idha waqa'at al-fitan bisham. Indeed, the Prophet of Allah said, indeed, that when the fitan strikes, iman, faith, iman is in Sham. Ya tuba li Sham, ya tuba li Sham, ya tuba li Sham. Oh, glad tidings for Sham. Oh, glad tidings for Sham. Oh, glad tidings for Sham. Wa bima dhalik ya Rasulullah. And what is that for, ya Rasulullah? Tilka malaikatullah. Those are the angels of Allah that wrap their wings around Sham, hadith. And so the focus therefore was in that part of the world. And these hadith were used to stimulate the people, the yearning for Jerusalem.
In the field of Aqidah, the Ayyubids paid attention to protecting and preserving the basic principles of belief as laid out by Imam Abul Hasan al-Ash'ari. Studies in philosophy played no role and were heavily frowned upon. The madrasa establishment spree by Salahuddin was imported from Sham along similar lines to what Nuruddin had done there and with a similar curriculum to the Nizami schools of Baghdad. In the bigger scheme of events, they were to play a critical and often underappreciated role in stemming the tide of Shiism and providing education grounded in Islam and relevant to the challenges of the time. The graduates of these madrasas completed the cultural and intellectual revolution in the Muslim world that had begun with stalwarts such as Imam Al-Ghazali.
They used the madrasa to teach people what was relevant in the contemporary setting. It wasn't all, you know, the basic Islamic education. It had a contemporary relevance for today. What is the Muslim world experiencing today? How much do we need to learn about suffering, about conflict, about genocide, about ethics, about justice, about values, so that our generation is not one that is apathetic like those first people in 1099 who just didn't know what to do, couldn't care that much. But no, there were a people who knew how to respond in ways that were appropriate, in ways that were appropriate.